The following show may contain language and content that may not be suitable for a younger audience. Listener discretion advised. Hey, you there. Come on, take a break with us. So, what's in store for this break? Let's find out together here on Itch Your Break.
Welcome to Itch Your Break. Hi, I'm Jonathan Mertz. And coming up on this episode of Itch Your Break, it's going to be a little different than usual. Normally you would see me doing a back and forth interview, but in this case, something happened. My dog Cisco happened, and he was a little rambunctious. All right, so this guy right here is the reason that I have to do my interview a different way. Yeah, even from that little clip, you saw how much he wanted my attention. And even though he was lonely and making noises the entire interview, it wreaked havoc on my podcast. But it only affected my side of the podcast. Everything that happened with my guest, DC the Brain Supreme from Tag Team, was perfectly fine. So there's no need to have him redo an interview when all the content's already there. So what does a person do in this situation? Well, you adapt and you move forward. I have multiple ways of doing this podcast, and you'll see coming up next here on Itch Your Break.
Itch Your Break will return right after this. Subscribe to the Itch Your Break podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, YouTube, and iHeartRadio. And now, back to Itch Your Break.
Welcome back to Itch Your Break. Hi, I'm Jonathan Mertz. And like I said earlier, this episode's going to be a little different because of some technical issues on my end. But who can blame this cuddly guy? So when life gives you lemons, you typically would make lemonade, but in my case, I chose to make lemon pie. A little more savory. And instead of doing the normal interview style podcast that I normally do, I'm going to do one that's more narrative and almost news-like, I guess, in a way, without being so monotonous. Like I mentioned in the intro, today's guest is going to be DC the Brain Supreme from the group Tag Team. And if you're born in the 2000s, well, you may know them from this Geico ad.
So what are you waiting for? Hip-hop group Tag Team to help you plan dessert?
But for the rest of us, we know him from this song. So how many of you are actually chanting that song right now? It's stuck in my head, but I have to focus and move on. When I received the email from DC saying that he wanted to be on my podcast, it kind of took me by surprise because people like to pretend to be other people sometimes. And I've had it happen to me over my many years in radio. And it doesn't happen often, but you quickly learn to vet everybody. And when he sent me his press kit, and I told him I was going to be doing video, I knew this was the right guy, because to put that much detail in this would be a huge undertaking. Not everybody's going to be able to do that. And I mentioned this to DC.
DC from Tag Team is joining me right now. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
You're welcome.
You know, when you reached out to me, I was like, is this really DC from Tag Team? Because I'm like, I'm a little skeptical at first. And I was like, if it is, it's totally amazing and totally awesome. Because I don't think I know anybody who has not been raised on your song or even influenced by your song that you did with your group, Whoop, There It Is. You know,
I mean, I just hustle, man. You know, I run my own PR firm and I know how to do this, and you got to put yourself out there. And these days I'm doing so much more than just Whoop, There It Is and Tag Team that, you know, this is the perfect opportunity to let the world know.
When I ask people onto the show,
I typically want to hear their backstory because I find it fascinating. I'm like, where did you start? You know, and when did you migrate to what you're doing now? Because that is such a learning experience. And to be honest, I didn't know a lot about DC's background. So I wanted to start and take everything back to the beginning. And I asked him, can we take this back to the beginning? And he said, yes. But I wasn't prepared for how detailed he was going to be about it.
Okay, so I was born in Chicago, Illinois. And we moved to Denver, Colorado when I was about 4 or 5 years old. And I had a great childhood. I got to play in the Rockies. I got to go to the mountains. Got to be a part of nature. We got to ride our bikes everywhere. We got to play till the sun went down. I had the perfect childhood. And, you know, we had a community of people who raised us. You know, other people's parents, church members, whatnot. And, you know, my parents instilled in me a work ethic early. I'm talking about, I used to have to help my mom cook and, you know, stem collard greens and shuck black eyed peas and just all the dirty work, all the grunt work, right? So I never thought work was hard. Work was just work. And we used to have to cut the grass, rake the leaves, shovel the snow. And then I figured out, hey, I can make money shoveling snow because everybody don't want to shovel snow, especially in blizzards in Denver. So we were one of the only families that had a snowblower. And me and my little brother, we would go around the whole neighborhood, shovel everybody's snow for free. And, you know, instead of getting $10 like we wanted, we would end up getting $20, $25. And this is back in the late 70s, early 80s, because people appreciated it. So I've been hustling since day one.
Hustling since day one. You know, it's apparent that DC's hard work ethic is deep in his bones. And as he continues to tell his story, you'll see how much that plays into his life.
Had a paper route at 8 years old, ran that. Then I worked at a little ice cream shop. I worked at as an AV tech at the University of Colorado, you know, just wheeling around projectors and TVs to classrooms for classes. I mean, just hustling. And, you know, I worked at Mile High Stadium selling Pepsis and hot dogs, right? So I got to watch the Denver Broncos for free, and I got to make a whole bunch of money. You know, I made $200, $300 every game, all in quarters, but hey, it's money, right?
So if you're like me, at this point, you're probably thinking, when did DC get into music, and when did he meet his bandmate, Steve, who he formed tag team with?
I got musically inclined when I got to high school. In 11th grade, I met Steve, and they had a band. I wanted to be in that band so bad. And after, you know, just relentless badgering, they finally let me in their band, and I was the lead singer of the band. And I also sang in the choir, one of the best choirs in the state of Colorado, Bolt Vibrations, Emmanuel High School. So I was musically inclined. I was on my way, and then I heard, you know, one of our high school parties, Steve and a couple of his friends, Rick Springs and other DJ crews were DJing. And I was like, whoa, that's dope. I want to do that. And I went and bought just a riggedy old Sherwood turntable and a terrible Technics turntable and a Radio Shack mixer, for those who remember Radio Shack. And I started DJing. Then I went to college and honed my skills of DJing. Met Johnny Z. Johnny Z is the producer of a group called In Too Deep. They made Back to the Hotel back in the day, a year before we made Whoomp There It Is. And that's, you know, one of my best friends to this day. We met in college, and we stayed on the same floor in the dorms. I taught him how to DJ, taught him how to rap, and he taught me about hard rock music. And we just, you know, music brings people together, man.
Like DC said, Johnny is one of his best friends. And because of Johnny, DC was able to start recording music.
We had four tracks. Johnny Z had got a four track our freshman year. And he didn't know how to use it. And I was like, give it to me. I'll learn how to use it. I'll teach you how to use it. And, you know, we had a little Yamaha, just a terrible Yamaha drum machine. So my homeboy had an 808. And I was like, man, please let me borrow your 808. He's like, you crazy, man. But you can come over and bring that four track, and I'll let you can sit here and make some beats, right? And I made like 10 beats on that 808. And that was the beginning of me making songs by myself and producing records, right? And those songs were made with little flutes, little kitty flutes, pots and pans, scratches, any sound that I could find that made that sounded good with a beat, right? And that's what started it. And I sent that tape to Steve. Steve thought I was into devil worship, right? And because he had never heard nothing like it, but it was just me being creative. And the lyrics were on point because I used to write lyrics in class. And it got good to me. I stole a rhyming dictionary from the library. Don't tell nobody. But that started me rapping because I was just in awe of all the words that rhymed. I just threw words that rhymed together, you know, in a pattern that was kind of slick. And then it just started sounding good. And people got to know me for my lyricism because I used a rhyming dictionary and I would use metaphors and I would use, you know, just real nice rhyme patterns, right? And just one thing led to another, and we're making songs and back and forth, and we just got good at it.
So DC is honing in on his craft, but in order to get to the next level, we know that he's going to need to go to Atlanta.
All the while, I'm hustling. I'm working. I'm trying to do good for myself, and I finish up college, and I go down to Atlanta because Steve went there for the Art Institute, and I went to visit. He was like, come down and visit for Christmas. And I went to this club called Magic City, Gentleman's Club. And I tell you, I had $500 in my pocket. And a half hour, that money was gone, right? And, you know, Tinkle and Sparkle got me good. You know what I mean? But I had never seen anything like that in my life, right? And that moment, I knew I was moving to Atlanta, Georgia. And we had a ball that week. I went back to California, finished up, because I went to Sac State University, and flew Steve out. We drove a U-Haul all the way across country to Atlanta, Georgia. And I had a job at CNN, and I went to Magic City, and the DJ sucked. And I talked to the owner, and he was like, I don't need a DJ, but I need a cook. And I might have cooked two orders of chicken wings and a salad. He's like, you be the cook and the backup DJ. And the guy that was the DJ that day, he was like, hey, man, can you cover for me for a while? I got to go run some errands. And back then, you never let anyone on your turntables or let anyone on. That's the beginning of hip hop. These are the rules, right? These are the rules of the party. These are the B-boy rules. So I got on the turntables and, heads started turning, heads stopped bobbing, money started flowing. And those girls hadn't seen money. They hadn't made money like that in a long time. And we had a meeting that week, that Sunday. And all the girls, 100 girls, they were like, we want him. And I was the head DJ at Magic City.
You know, as strange as it sounds, the Gentleman's Club in Magic City could possibly be the launching pad that DC and Tag Team need.
You know, back then, all the record companies used to bring us our records. They had record reps. Each region had a rep. So you had Columbia, Epic, A&M, Warner Brothers. You just had everybody. And they used to just drop them off. But one guy in particular, Doug Craig, he had dropped off a record. He's like, man, I could use some help on this record. It's a Candyman record back in the day. I was like, I got you. And I started playing it. He came back the next week. And he's like, what you think about that Candyman record? And I was like, Candy, come here. And I was like, you on stage next? He said, I'm about to show you. And I played the record while the girl was on stage. And she loved the record. And if she loves the record and she's dancing and vibing to it, that means everybody else is going to like the record because she's beautiful, butt naked, and dancing to a record. And the guys end up liking that record. And that was my beginning of breaking records. True sense of breaking records, right? And every rep heard about it. He made his report, sent it back to New York and LA, and they were like, man, you tripping. That record ain't doing nothing. They said, we're going to come down this weekend, and we want you to show us. So he brought them down. They came to the club, and the same thing happened again. This time, three more girls liked the record. So what that means is, if you have three girls that like the record, that's three times on stage. The girls go on stage twice a night. That's six times your record's being played in a club full of 500 people. That's radio play, basically, right? That's radio. It's radio play in the streets, right? So, yeah, so then everybody got kind of hip to it, and then I became known for breaking records back then.
So there's something I didn't realize. The record companies used to go to these gentlemen's clubs and promote records. Hmm. Didn't realize they did that. But the one thing that's running through my mind is, did DC take advantage of this? I mean, the record executives are already coming through the club. Why not? Maybe this is how he launches tag team.
I would break my own records, because me and Steve were still making records. We always made records. Or every time we make a song, I would go to work and play the record, and all the girls would like it. And every record we made, the girls would like, you know? And then I knew where we were, though. We were down south. We were in Atlanta, Georgia. And down south, if you're going to come out of down south, you got to make booty shake, right? And I told Steve we got to make some booty shake, man. He was like, man, I don't know how to make that. I was like, we ain't got to do it like that. We just got to make up-tempo music. We got to go back to the essence of hip-hop, because the beginning of hip-hop, the essence of hip-hop is up-tempo music. It's Planet Rock. It's Al Nafish. Yeah, yeah, it's all those records, right? Because that's when the B-boy era started. So that's when it truly manifested, right, with everybody. But then you have on the West Coast, Dr. Dre with Surgery, Egyptian Lover, Jamie Jupiter. You know what I mean? You had those records. And they're hip-hop, too. And then you got Luke doing what they're doing down in Florida. So it was just a combination of all those. So Steve made a beat. I had a stack of rhyme books because I was always writing. And I tried to start trying to match up lyrics with the song, you know, just with the beat that I thought might work. And one of those songs was Whoomp There It Is. And Whoomp There It Is was just a saying then, right? Just everybody would say it in the clubs, like a party, it's like throw your hands in the air. And I put it to that. Steve had the beat. We used the Kano sample. We recorded it. And in August of 1992, I went to work and got set up, put that cassette tape in the tape player. And to this day, that's the biggest response on any record I've ever had.
So we were right. He launched Whoomp There It Is in the club in August of 1992. But when did it leave the club and become a national icon? Well, we'll soon find out.
And to this day, that's the biggest response on any record I've ever had as a DJ. And I've been DJing for 30 years. Just played it. The girls loved it. And I knew I had something, but every song I felt like that, right? So I stopped playing it for a while because we had other songs that we were working and trying to play. And probably in January, one of the girls was like, how come you don't play Whoomp There It Is anymore? And I was like, I'll play it for you. Played it again. Same thing happened. But that night, a guy named Alan Cole, who worked for Columbia Records, was in the house.
Wait a second. Could this be the executive that signs DC to his record deal? And is it really going to be that simple?
And he was like, what is that? Right? Because I knew all the reps, right? You know, I knew all the reps from all the record companies, right? So he was like, DC, what is that? I was like, that's my new record. He was like, man, give me that. I'm sending that to New York right now. And he sent it to New York, and then we start negotiating, and then I start negotiating with everybody. And everybody was open to trying to sign us, but nobody was trying to pull the trigger. They was like, well, we want to develop you, and we want to do this. And I was like, I'm not trying to hear that. We ready to go now. You know what I'm saying? I got a hit record. I know what I got. You know what I mean? It's like, we don't have to go through all that. And I was about to give up. And a lady named Lisa McCall, who worked for Mercury, she said, you need to call Al Bell. Because Al Bell put out Daisy Dukes the year before by Deuce. And that was a bass record, and it went gold. And I was like, that is true. Wow. And he knows what he kind of knows what he's doing with these. And I called him, and about a week later he called me back. And I was like, Mr. Bell, look, man, I'm not playing. I got a hit record. I've been a DJ. I'm in the hottest clubs in this city. And this record is a hit. He's like, all right, let's do it. I was like, you haven't even heard the record. And he's like, I don't have to hear the record, my brother. I hear it in your spirit. And I was like, all right. And I'll never forget that. I'll never forget that. And he said, let's agree to agree. And then we signed a messed up contract. And I gave my 2 weeks notice in Magic City. And in a month and a half, we were platinum. And the rest is history.
So Alan Cole didn't sign tag team. But they got the buzz started about him. And inadvertently got them signed to a record deal. It's pretty cool. But the one thing I found really, really interesting about his record deal is that somebody trusted him solely on his confidence. And I was so impressed with that that I had to mention this to DC. Here's his response to that.
That happens a lot because when I talk to people, you know, that I know what to say. I'm a people person. That's where Party People comes from. I'm a DJ, right? You know what I'm saying? I'm a DJ and I know crowds. I know how to read people. I know how to read crowds. I know how to read moods. I know how to read all those things because I did it every night for 30 years. So I'm an expert speaker at it, right? as you would say. So.
At this point, we know that Tag Team is signed, but the song is still not on the national level yet. So it begs the question, how did it get there?
You know, we were on the road, and what really did it, friend of mine, Ed Lover, everybody used to come down to Magic City because it was the place to be. And they would come see me because I was a DJ. And I'm talking to everybody in hip hop. I knew everybody before I even was in the game, right? And Ed had came and heard the record. He was like, man, I gotta have that record, money. Who is that? And I was like, that's me, man. He's like, man, give me that record. And I said, here you go. I gave him a cassette. And he was like, man, I can't use no cassette. I need vinyl. So after I left Magic City and we had signed a contract, I was like, you gotta get me vinyl ASAP, Mr. Bell. And he pressed me up vinyl ASAP. And I met Ed down at Magic City, gave him about 10 copies, right? He goes back to New York that Monday. Him and Dr. Dre on Yo MTV Raps play Whoomp There It Is the whole show. And it blew up like wildfire.
Wait. So you're telling me Dr. Dre and Ed Lover are responsible for Whoomp There It Is being delivered to the masses? That gives me cold chills. That is so freaking cool. But this is only the beginning of the song's fandom.
Then a week later, the Bulls win their third championship. Now everybody, I got a 500,000 people in Grand Park chanting, Whoomp, There It Is. With Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, and all the Bulls leading the way, right? That really blew it out of the frame, and then we just never looked back.
Like all things, this phenomenon has to come to an end. But when did that happen? And what happened afterwards?
We did show after show after show after show. It was on TV show after TV show. We got to do a lot of fun stuff. We had a good 3 or 4 year ride. And the record company went bankrupt. And, you know, we were trying to get our money. But I didn't know back then that, you know, record company cannot last you. And, you know, they went bankrupt. And then my lawsuit was over. And we just faded. And I, you know, I went back to what I know, DJing. But back then, I had one of the biggest clubs in Atlanta. It was called Atlanta Live. It was almost like making show money every night because it was a club that held 4,000 people every Saturday. So, yeah, so I'm the head DJ of that club. Everybody thinks I own the club. So it's like, it could have been an awkward situation, but it wasn't. And another reason it wasn't awkward because I never changed. I was always DC.
One thing you'll notice about DC is that he adapts to his environment, no matter what's thrown in front of him.
Even at the height of everything, I was still DC. People still could call me. People still could hang around me. It was still the same. It wasn't any different. So, you know, throughout time, we just worked hard. I was DJing. I became a licensed commodities broker. Right now, I'm an actor. You know what I mean? I've got 2-3 movies under my belt. I've got TV shows under my belt. Tons of voiceover on the mic. I do commercial, animation, promo, video games. I do all that type of voiceover. So I stay busy, and we do show. We've been doing shows for forever, right? We do halftime shows. That's our specialty, halftime shows at NFL games and basketball games. And those are licks. Those pay well. So we've had it good, and everybody thinks that we've been gone, but we really haven't, but that's okay.
Because DC adapts into a variety of new careers, like acting and voice acting, it leads him right in to the now infamous Geico ad.
Because now the narrative is, you know, this Geico commercial is a redemption story. You know what I mean? It's a story of you're never too old to do anything, right? And it's like, I've never stopped, right? But I embrace that because it's true. This is, everybody asks me, hey, man, aren't you glad you have a Geico commercial? Are you excited? I was like, I was excited in September when they called. I was excited the first 2 days. Then it was time to go to work because I'm an actor and this is right up my alley. So I prepared for this, right? I prepared for that commercial. That's where you think the spin and scoop comes from, where you think sprinkles come from. All that stuff was hashed out and rehearsed before I even told the director about it. And I asked the director, I got some ideas. And he was like, whatever you want to do, DC. And we did it all. And those are the nuances.
Now I'm going to step back just a second and throw in a twist. All of the clips that you've seen up to this point, about 90% of them, were DC telling his story nonstop. I didn't even get a word in edgewise. But that's okay, because I love to hear a good story. And I made mention of this to DC that everything I was going to ask, you just explained from start to finish.
It happens to everybody, man. I tell you, people might get in 3 questions and that's it.
But our interview didn't stop there. And DC explains how he can tell his story in a multitude of ways and how he makes himself invaluable.
There are so many threads and I can tell the same story 100 different ways, right? But you asked me a question. Let's take it back to the beginning. And I went back to the beginning of birth, where I was born and brought you all the way to now. And there's nothing, I didn't miss too much. You know what I mean? Now we get into the hustle. Now we get into the, you can do whatever you want to do. Don't let anybody tell you can't do anything. Now we get into the, wow, you know SEO? Wow, you know how to, you know Photoshop? You know how to video edit? You know how to make movie trailers? You know how to do all these things? And it was like, because I was in the clubs. When you're a DJ in the clubs, if you want to be the DJ always in the clubs, you have to make yourself invaluable. So I would make myself invaluable by learning how to do the lighting, learning how to put together the sound system, learning how marketing works, learning to do the flyers for the club, learning to do everything that they would have to hire somebody to do so I could get 6 streams of income in one entity.
And that is absolutely cool, because you did this all at the beginning before the internet revolution. Yeah. And hitting that out and getting the promos. I mean, that's when you physically had to go staple the flyers to the telephone poles. Exactly. People don't remember that.
They don't remember that. You know, I used to throw them on parties at the dining commons. I used to have to go and move about 50 tables, 150 chairs by myself just so I could have a party for all my friends, you know, all the people in the dorms on Friday nights. I paid my dues, you know what I mean? And I got better as a DJ. And once I got to the clubs, it was the same way. I always worked harder than everybody else. And people would see me do that, be like, why is he changing the lights? And it's like, because I'm getting paid to do this. You don't even know it. Everybody just think I'm doing stuff, but then everybody recognizes you as the lifeblood of the club. So that is called job security. And it's called financial security, because if you're making $10, now you're making $60.
Did you know that DC just pointed out something that many of us forget to do? If you take on more responsibilities willingly, don't do it for free. And the reason for that is it's how you build wealth, according to DC.
So you're gonna magnify that by 6, whatever you do. So anything I do, I always try to magnify it by 6 or 7. Because that's how you build wealth.
DC has a unique approach to life and learning. But sometimes we need to step back and reevaluate how we learn.
There are certain pinpoint things that have happened in my life that led me to learn things, you know, by myself. It's like, you know, my whole approach now is learn how to learn, right? Like, you can read a book, but how much are you going to retain reading that book? What if you don't like reading books? What are you going to do? You're going to daydream. You're going to say you have dyslexia when you really don't. You're just lazy, right? You see what I'm saying? So what I do, you got to learn how to learn. So just because you don't want to read a book doesn't mean that you can't throw it in the AI software and the AI software reads it to you, right? That does, you know, that I do that all the time. I could take this podcast, throw it in the AI software and it gives me a transcript. Then I can read it. Then I could throw this transcript in the AI software and then read this whole interview and go over it and pinpoint the things that I want to change as far as writing and then turn it into a blog. You see what I'm saying? Or turn it into a bunch of pieces or turn it into a script or turn it into a quote or turn it into anything I want, which is content. And this is all about content, information, and getting out to the people who need to see it and getting in front of the people who make decisions that can get you paid. Right? So that is what my goal is. So
you have to learn how to learn. It's an interesting approach. But more importantly, make use of what you have around you and what's available, including technology.
You know, one of the times in my life that I could pinpoint where I actually started understanding that you have to be on point. 2012, Gawker had published an article that Barack Obama was in tag teams. Whoop, there it is, right?
Oh, yes. You heard that right. Back when Obama was president, tag teams, whoop, there it is, made headlines again because there was a lookalike in the video. And because people were interested in finding out if this was Obama, it shed some light on an issue that DC wasn't aware of at the time.
Nobody could find me. Everybody was trying to find us. They actually, a reporter from the New York Times called me at the club and was like, I got to talk to you. And I was like, tell him to take a message. And I went to the front and I was like, I'm at work. She's like, I got to talk to you. She's telling me, I was like, call me in the morning at this number. She called me in the morning. And she was like, I couldn't find you. And I said, that's a problem, right? If you're gonna get shows, if you're going to be relevant, you have to be found, right? So that started my SEO journey. How can you be found? Because I know how to do all the regular promotion stuff, but now we're in a new age of the internet. We're in the age of YouTube. We're in the age of Instagram. We're in the age of Twitter. We're in the infancy of all these. You know, this is the post MySpace. It's not just a little cute thing anymore. This is the way of the world now. And I started on my SEO journey, and I said that'll never happen again. And I started just grinding and figuring out ways to get better at it, putting together websites for the club, understanding how to write better, just all the things that come with really being your own entity as far as putting websites and things of that nature together and learning SEO. But SEO is difficult because it's a moving target.
DC is always making self-realizations about himself. This is one of the things I find really admirable about him. And it's one of the things I find so inspiring about him. When DC realized that people had trouble finding him, he knew he had to do something about it. And because of this, it sent him down a new path of learning. He taught himself SEO, search engine optimization. It's what web engines use to find you and your information about you or your company. One of the things that you'll understand about DC is he's a man of many hats. And at the same time he was learning SEO, well, he incorporated other things into his career path.
Also at that time, I knew I wasn't going to be a DJ forever, so I started training in New York and LA for voiceover. You know, and I thought, hey, I'm DC the Brand Supreme. I could do anything, right? And voiceover was difficult. It still is difficult. It's one of the hardest things I've ever had to do.
As you may be well aware of, I love voice acting. It's one of my passions. And one of the things I also love to hear is how other people's journeys are going in voice acting. And because DC brought it up, I had to chime in and explain my distaste for cold reads. A cold read is where you have to read a script for the very first time without rehearsing it and without seeing it. You have to do it then and there. And not everybody gets it on the first try. And when I mentioned this to DC, his response took me by surprise.
You just met one. All right, and I'm gonna tell you why. But I'll get to that because it's important that I tell you at the beginning of my voiceover career because I thought it was the coach's fault.
So there was a time that he had trouble with cold reads. But I'm wondering, how does this story progress?
I'm like, I'm thinking I'm not getting it. I'm like, why am I not getting this? You know, but I wasn't getting it because my hubris. You know what I'm saying? I am who I am. I'm DC the Brand Supreme. You know, I thought I could whoop, there it is, my way through it, right? And I was sorely mistaken. And I was disappointed. And, you know, I did that for like 3 or 4 years. And I was working. I worked for Apple Radio. I was doing voice over here, voice over there, but I didn't have mastery over my voice. So I've always been working on voiceover. So I go back 2012, I'm working on SEO, voiceover, getting better at graphics, getting better at all the things that make you a great marketer. And I was like, it's time to go. I decided to retire in 2015. And it was terrifying, you know, because I've been a DJ since I was a kid, right? And I was like, I want to do voiceover. And I retired and I dedicated myself to it. And soon after I retired, I got on with Apple Music, back when they used to do commercials, and they weren't, you know, they would do commercials if you got the free version, and then they would do no commercials once you signed up. And then it got to the point where everybody started signing up, so they killed the commercial division of it. But then after that, I got signed to the People Store agency in Atlanta for voiceover, because they need an African-American voice. So now I'm getting put on. So it's working, but it's not working as fast as I want.
In 2015, DC left the clubs, and he started focusing on acting and voice acting. But the bookings aren't at the pace he wants. And he also notices that tag team's bookings aren't happening at the pace he wants either. So, what does he do to combat this?
At the same time, I'm trying to develop tag team. We're doing halftime shows. We're doing shows here. But we really don't have a web presence, because I'm in the process of learning SEO. And I'm getting good at it too, right? And I dropped our website maybe in 2017. And at the beginning, you type in tag team, it was all wrestling, right? You type in tag team today, it's all tag team.
That is one of the things that I want to learn myself as SEO. One of my former employers who left radio altogether as well and got into photography full-time, mm-hmm. and is made killing in photography. That's his thing. He loves doing SEO. He is the business side of his little photography company. And he's always looking at it. And I'm trying to get tips from him. But for you, what was your best, like, resource to learn SEO?
There's courses. Really, I just had good mentors, right? People, you know, you'd be surprised that if you say, hey, man, I tried all the courses, I need some help, that even the masters will help you if you just ask for help. Everybody can't ask for help. I ask for help. I say, hey, man, I need help. And I've got cats that help me, and they've helped me through it. And it's hard for them, too, because it's a moving target. It changes. Google changes the rules, and everybody has to learn the game again, right? So I got really good at it. Tag team started working. Now the site is humming. And we were doing shows, but we weren't doing shows at a clip that I liked, right? It was just like every now and then I would talk to the booking agents, and they were like, well, we're trying. And I was like, I understand. But I said, you know what? And this is another learn how to learn moment. I said, you know what? Let me find an organization, how this works. And I joined IEBA, International Entertainment Buyers Association, and circumvented all the booking agents and went directly to the buyers at the top of the food chain. And I went to a convention, 5,000 strong, and wore a big Whoomp There It Is t-shirt, introduced myself to everybody as a clean rap group. And now I've got people interested. Now we start getting calls. Now we get calls from a buyer. He wants us for 10 dates. Now we're getting casinos. Now we're getting rodeos. Now we're getting state fairs. Now we're getting cruise ships. Now we're getting every form of entertainment that's out there that I had bypassed. I'm just thinking clubs and, you know, venues. But there are so many ways that people buy entertainment that we were in the running for 30 dates with the Ice Capades. But the lady who did that, she wanted exclusivity, and we just couldn't do it because there were so many other people wanting to do stuff with, like Hard Rock Cafe wanted to do some stuff with us. Like, but all because of this organization, things started moving. So I'm dealing with maybe 10, 15 different booking agents. And then it got too much for me. And then I just, you know, I proved myself that I work and got tag team. We started doing shows and people started responding and seeing that a promoter started getting to know us and knowing that we're professional. Now we do shows, right? And it worked out.
DC's amazing ability to think outside the box allowed him to circumvent the promoters. And his way of life and motto, learning how to learn, continually pushes him to think outside of the box.
That's one of the learn how to learn things. So every time I get stuck, which brings me to now, the Geico commercial comes. I'm like, you know what? I need a publicist. Because I'm trying to blow up acting, voiceover, tag team takes care of itself. That's going to happen. You know, it's in the nostalgia phase. It's not going anywhere. But this is the perfect time to blow up acting and voiceover. And I'm trying to find a publicist. And the publicist is like, pandemic. We don't know if we want to do this. Oh, my God. You know, and I'm like, okay, fine, cool. I said, I'm going to go join the Public Relations Society of America. And 2 days in, I got on a Zoom call with one of these CEOs of a PR firm. And I asked a question. I said, are press releases relevant? Because I had a press release ready and everything. I was going to do a big press release when the commercial dropped and, you know, just get it out there. But I was like, hold on. Really learn how press releases work, right? And I'll never forget it. They were like, well, what's the press release about? And I was like, well, I'm kind of in a commercial, national commercial, Geico commercial called Scoop, There It Is. And I'm looking at the chat. And it's like, wait a minute. Is that what? I love that commercial. My kids love that commercial, right? The chat's just blowing up, right? And the lady's like, we'd like to welcome DC. He's a new member. We're going to talk to you about this Geico commercial after, but are they relevant? And she was like, heck yeah, they're relevant, especially now. I mean, she just started to just tell me why they were that, why it was relevant, right? And I knew this already, but I just wanted to hear, you want validation sometimes, right, for your theories. And then something magical happened. People started just giving me the game. You want to go to this site for this site to get in front of all the journalists. You want to go to this site this way. You want to do all your pitches like this. They gave me the game in 10 minutes, and I've never looked back.
As you listen to DC talk about each and every new avenue he takes, you quickly notice that he stops and asks for directions. More importantly, he asks for help and advice. It's something that many of us don't even think about doing because either one, we're too proud, or two, we're too embarrassed. And we don't need to be that way. We need to do the same thing for ourselves. And because of this trait, it led DC straight to me and this podcast.
And that's why you and I are right here talking right now, because I didn't accept that I couldn't do my own PR, right? I didn't accept that, well, they couldn't do it for me, so I guess it can't be done. I was like, no, it could be done. And I'm going to show you it could be done. So now, I dropped that press release 3 days before the Super Bowl, that Thursday. The next day, we're on Dan Patrick's show. Because of that press release, it was that quick, right? Then, a couple weeks ago, we do Tamron Hall. Tomorrow, we're about to do ESPN. And then we got Ellen lined up, Kelly Clarkson show, Kelly and Ryan lined up, Good Morning America, and anything else I want. Because now I'm good at it, right? Now I know how to pitch people. I know how to get in front of people. And I have a good story.
DC's determination to do things himself is an interesting quality. And knowing how to truly promote yourself is amazing as well. Like he said, all it takes is a good story.
I have fashioned the narrative through SEO, which is the website, and all the other entities on the internet, the Wikipedia pages. The Wikipedia pages, everybody goes to the Wikipedia pages to find the information about whatever they're looking for. If they go to your Wikipedia page or you don't have one, or your Wikipedia page got old stuff on it from 20 years ago, somebody like Nikki Swift or Looper that's going to make one of those videos, what is tag team doing today? Or who are these rappers tag team? And they do an expose on you, are going to be regurgitating old information about you when they need to be telling the information about now. So I went and redid all those Wikipedia pages. And then Looper and Nikki Swift did a big video. And everything in that video was accurate. It was my narrative. It was Tag Team's narrative. It's how we wanted to be portrayed to the world.
Okay. Did you hear what he just said at the very end there? He said, that's how we wanted to be portrayed to the world. DC learned how to take control of his own narrative using his new skill set in conjunction with social media. Makes you think maybe we should be doing this ourselves as well. But as we continue on with DC's story, you'll see how he continues to develop his skills.
Now, that's all you have to do, right? So now I'm doing all podcasts, interviews, television. I'm booking for television shows. I'm booking for music, movies. That's the beauty. 2020 was one of the best years of my life because the pandemic forced everybody to stop at the same time and ask yourself, what the hell are you going to do? And I said, I'm doing voiceover. And I went every class that I do, every class I take, acting, voiceover, whatever, conference, I recorded. And I archive them. And I went back and I organized all those old voiceover things. And I had to listen to my old 10-year self, right? And I had to listen to how bad I was. And I had to listen to how my ego was getting in the way. And I had to listen to me 10 years ago spewing bullshit, trying to bullshit, you know, people who knew what they were talking about. Because I didn't understand, right? And it was heartbreaking, right? That I had to listen and stomach that. But it was also inspiring because I started filling in the holes and I started strengthening my weaknesses. Because I would hear a script that I said, I was like, oh my God, I said it like that. And then I said, I'm doing this over. And I would read that script and listen to the lesson they were trying to tell me about diction, about stringing your words together, about what words are important in the script. What is the writer trying to say? What are you? Who are you talking to? What do the specs say? What does the producer want? Putting all these things together because now I'm an actor. Right, as well, so I understand the language, and they were flawless, and I did that for 40 different episodes. I did one a day at the beginning of the pandemic, and within 2 months, I started booking like crazy.
Early on in this podcast, I mentioned that DC has been a hustler since day one, and that hasn't changed. Even in his acting career, that has not changed.
And then I got a call because I would stay in class every day on acting, and I got to meet all the coaches, and I befriend all the coaches, and I'll even do like video work for the coaches and help set up class and everything. Get a call from a coach. She's the casting director on a movie they're shooting in Nebraska. Can you travel? Sure can. I got a role for you. Boom. Flew up to Nebraska, shot for a week. Now I'm in a movie that's about to come out called My Corona. And then on the flip side, it's a documentary about shooting in Corona, in the time of Corona. Then I come back, shoot another movie, get another call, shoot another movie down in Georgia. Then I'm booking for voiceover. Then I booked to Tyler Perry. Then Geico calls. And it's just been this, I'm getting better and better by the day. And this is even before the Geico commercial. So the Geico commercial is like cherry on top. Now I am a working, everything I wanted to be. I'm a working actor and I'm a working voice artist. But there are levels to all this. So I am in a position now to flourish. So it would behoove me to not sit here and talk to you and just hone my skills. When I do these, I'm honing my skills in so many different ways. I'm honing my skills in storytelling, in diction, in articulation. I'm practicing voiceover. I'm practicing my inflections. I'm practicing my storytelling. I'm practicing, you know, motivational speaking. I'm practicing inspiration. Just trying to tell people the things that I wish somebody had told me as a young man, right? And you wouldn't have never thought that this conversation would even go this way.
One of the things that I take away from DC's story is that you had to put in the work and effort in all of the things that you do, not just one or two.
That's where we're at. And I get up every morning and I play offense. And don't think about it. It's not a quid pro quo. I do this, so therefore I should get that. Life don't work like that. You throw it in the universe and you look back in your wake and you see the things that you those seeds that you laid. You know, I laid so many seeds, and all these seeds that I've laid over the years, right now I'm standing in a forest. You know, and all those seeds have come to fruition all at the same time, simultaneously, and we just move forward. And I'm just trying to be great, you know. Everybody's like, you already are great. No, I'm not, because I'm humble. You'll never hear me rah-rah. You'll never hear me say I'm the best. All I can tell you is I do my best. And when I do my best, things usually turn out pretty okay.
If you followed me for any time whatsoever, you know that I geek out when it comes to voice acting. And me being me, I had to focus on voice acting again in this podcast. It's what I do. So I asked DC, do you have any favorite voice actors?
Yeah, there's some, you know what I mean? But it's funny because I'm being coached by some of them, right? You know, and that's the beauty of it. You know, all my coaches went to Juilliard, but all my coaches are actors and they're highly accomplished people, right? And they have trained me well. You know, Joan Baker, Rudy Gaskins, Denise Woods, Eileen Kimball, they have trained me well. And these are really big people. Keith David, he's probably my favorite. You know, I model myself after him a lot. Joe Cipriano, there's several, right? But I'm peers with all these people now, right? I've been peers with these people for a while, so it's kind of hard to say who do you look up to when they're your peers. But you might want to say, like, who do you respect in the game that's doing it, that's been doing it so big for so long? And then there's so many voiceover artists that, you know, we're all doing good work. You know what I mean? We're all trying to just be the best. We're all trying to be good working actors. And there are some who've made a real good career of it. And there's some who are still trying to get there. And, you know, I'm up against people who've been in the game for 30 years, right? And it's going to take me some time to get to where I want to be. And I accept that.
During the actual interview I did with DC, I explained to him how much I admired Dave Fox. Dave Fox was the voice of Z100 New York, New York for many years. And he's one of my mentors. Likewise, I also had to mention another mentor of mine, James Arnold Taylor, and how much I admired his work. And then I also had to mention how much I love Phil Lamar and Kevin Michael Richardson. These are all guys I look up to in the voice acting industry. And I made mention of all these things to DC. But DC being DC, and his quick wisdom, perfectly explains why I like them.
They're bees. They have mastery over their voice. The key is having mastery over your voice, understanding scripts, and then being an actor. Because to do animation, you better be an actor, because you're going to have to put yourself in places that you're like, man, I'm acting, right? And that is the key. That is the key, man, I'm telling you. And I just work at it every day and just do the best I can, man. That's all I can do.
One of the biggest things that James Arnold Taylor told me one time, he's one of my mentors, and I didn't know this, and he does so many different things. You know, he's Obi-Wan Kenobi from the Star Wars The Clone Wars. He's Johnny Test. He's Ratchet from the Ratchet and Clank games. And he's also Titus from Final Fantasy. But what he said, he says he gets the most work out of using his natural voice instead of doing some character voice. And that, to me, that, you know, when I was first starting to learn a lot of this, I was like, that's kind of odd. But it's in a sense, truth. What can you do the best? You can do you. And that's how you do
and
it.
And you just do it. But see, if you're in that position, if you're hanging off of a bridge with one hand, you're going to talk differently if you're just walking in the park with a girl, right?
Right.
You're still going to be you, but you're going to be talking. You're going to be like, oh my God, get me out of here. Or you're going to be like, hey, this is such a beautiful day. I love you so much. You're still you. But you're two different people, man. You're two different people. You're two different characters. And everything comes back to you, right? And the beautiful part is that you have a lifetime of experiences that you can draw from. So you can teleport yourself back to those instances where you can think about how the trees smelled and what was being said and were there birds around, were there animals around. You could put yourself there and you can go back and you could just be you because that's the scene that you're in. And your voice is going to naturally do what it's supposed to do, right? You don't have to put anything on it. And that makes the best board. That makes real good video game voice actors and animation as well. Now, there are some times where you're going to have voices depending on the animation, right? If you're doing Clone Wars animation, man, you better be yourself, right? Because if you're yourself, everybody's going to love you if they love your character just when you talk. You know what I'm saying? Just when you talk because you're yourself. You are that character that they love.
I can't fathom it. DC has such a great grasp on this topic. And the fact that he promotes the same thing I hear from other actors and voice actors that I hear over and over again is really impressive. It's just simple. Just be you. And of course, he throws in, you've got to learn how to learn.
You got to create your own luck. You got to learn how to learn. All these things are relevant to you being successful. You got to play offense. You got to be creative. That's the equivalent, you know, of the behind the back pass and a no look pass and all that. The creativity, and you score because of your creativity. So I think all dreams can come true. And my goal is to not leave this earth with nothing unsaid, nothing undone. And I don't want any regrets. And that's what I work toward.
Okay, so before I conducted this interview, I had posted on social media to many of my friends and followers out there, hey, I'm going to be doing an interview with DC the Brain Supreme from Tag Team. Do you all have any questions you would like for me to ask? One of my friends, Robin, quickly responded and wanted to know, what type of music does he listen to? Well, his answer is a bit odd.
I don't even listen to music no more. You know, I'll listen to Jeezy if I'm working out. That's about it, man. And then, you know, a couple of 90s, like Michael Jackson, stuff like that, if I'm working out. But just listen to music, I don't listen to music.
I mentioned earlier on in the interview that DC threw in so much information out there in a nonstop pace that I myself didn't have a chance to ask any questions because he was covering everything. Like he would just say it and it would just be there. And everything I was going to ask was there. Likewise, many of the user's submissions he covered in the beginning of this podcast. Like one of my friends, Matt Adams, he wanted to know if DC had any input on the lyrics and what to do on the Geico commercial. And yeah, absolutely he did. And because of this, I didn't have any more questions to ask him from fans. But me being me, I still had questions to ask. And this time, it isn't about voice acting, but it's about traditional acting. I asked DC if he was ever going to be in a movie genre, what would it be?
Don't even matter. I'm an actor. You know what I mean? It's like whatever come my way. You know, my agent was like, so what do you want to be? What do you want to do? And I was like, I'm good. You guys do a good job for me. And they're like, no, DC, what do you want to do? And I was like, man, I'm happy. But then they were like, DC, what is your bucket list? And I was like, oh. Now that you say that, I want to be in The Mandalorian. I want to be in anything Star Wars. I want to do the Marvel stuff. I said, I want to be in big pictures with little parts. Give me 5 lines with The Rock in a movie. I'm good. Right? I don't got to be the star. I despise stardom. I don't have to be the star. But I do like being in big things with little parts. So if you can get me into big movies with little parts, I'm good. And that's what's starting to happen. So but I'm an actor first, and whatever comes my way, I'm going to do the best I can to rock it. And that's just the way it is.
That's an interesting perspective, isn't it? Don't just pick a platform, but if you pick a bucket list, then that's something more meaningful, isn't it? It's pretty interesting. For any of you all wanting to keep in touch with DC or to find out how to get a hold of him, I actually asked him, what's the best way to get that information?
So this goes back to SEO. All you gotta do is type in DC Glenn or DC Attack Team, and I'm all over the place, and you can find me. It's that simple. Every single social media site that I have is DC Glenn ATL. Everything else is Tag Team Womp. They're all symmetrical, right? And you'll find everything you need to find in my knowledge panel, my Google knowledge panel. And you can find me. It's that easy. People find me all the time.
Well, man, thank you again for everything. And hopefully we'll cross paths again, because I'd love to have you back on the show again.
But hey, man, you have a good rest of your evening. And everybody out there, I appreciate y'all having me. Peace.
So I told you this interview was going to be different. And then hopefully you enjoyed it. And if you haven't done so already, make sure to please like, comment, and subscribe to our podcast. And would you please do me a favor? If you're listening to us on any of the podcasting platforms out there, please leave us a review. We'd like to hear from you. And one last thing, make sure you take a break for yourself.
This episode of It's Your Break was not a paid advertisement. Follow Jonathan Mertz on Twitter at Jonathan Mertz. That's JonathanMertz. Follow It's Your Break on Twitter at It's Your Break. Subscribe to the It's Your Break podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the iHeartRadio app. This episode of It's Your Break was hosted, announced, engineered, edited, and produced by Jonathan Mertz. And it was recorded and produced at the Spark of Vision Studios. All sound effects and music were purchased through Sound Ideas, Pro Sound Effects, iStock, and Spark of Vision. It's Your Break is owned and distributed by Spark of Vision. Copyright It's Your Break. All rights reserved.